This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
While Puerto Rico is oftentimes described as an unincorporated territory of the United States, I believe a more accurate political and legal description is that it is a colony of the United States, a colony that has 3.5 million United States citizen residents as well, who do not have the right to vote for president or representation in Congress, and is now making headlines these days because of its inability to pay a $72 billion debt owed to holders of its devalued bonds. One of the solutions offered in the United States to solve the economic crisis is to place the entire island in receivership. In other words, to go back to an even more rigid colonial system so that the bonds market can protect its investment. Now, how Washington helped create Puerto Rico's staggering debt crisis and its effect on millions of what are effectively second-class U.S. citizens, and of course, what is to be done. Joining us is Nelson Dennis, former state assemblyman, author of The War Against All Puerto Ricans, Revolution and Terror in America's Colony, and perhaps the reason the book is so well-written is, I should say, that Nelson Dennis also was on the editorial board of El Diario, one of the most prominent Puerto Rican dailies. And it is a delight and a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Mimi. We've got to stop meeting this way.
I don't know about that. We just have to deepen the relationship. I'm glad for our listeners' sake that we are meeting this way, because The War Against All Puerto Ricans, Revolution and Terror in America's Colony is must reading, and it is reading that is crisp and energizing, and I don't know, from the very first words, which talk about the disappearance of your father, who was grabbed by FBI agents and taken away, never to be seen again. I was just, what a learning experience, and what a painful learning experience, but so necessary to understand more about the situation of my sisters and brothers. So let's begin with the fact that people have to get this book, The War Against All Puerto Ricans, if they have any sense of a democratic right within the society. It's a situation, what happens on the island proper, what our relationship to it is, that is the U.S. government, etc. So take us back to the content of this book and how you think it begins to inform and help us understand the present-day staggering debt crisis.
Well, that's a perfect entry point question, because this is a case where their history is repeating itself, and almost on a daily, on a continuing basis. The relationship between the United States and Puerto Rico has been entirely one-sided, and the results, the net result that we see now, is really just a part of a continuum. It's to those that are watching it and that they see the historical precursors, it's not even a new development. It's just it's just a disease that it manifests itself more clearly, but it's been there all along. So the example, the background is starts from the beginning in 1898. The United States occupied. The very following year, there was the worst hurricane in that century in Puerto Rico was Hurricane San Ciriaco, which hit the entire island, devastated the entire year's coffee crop, rendered tens of thousands of farmers homeless. It was a catastrophe. The United States, though, sent no relief of any sort, and instead, and this was in 1899, in the following year, in 1900, what the United States did is it devalued the Puerto Rican currency by 40% by legislative fiat, and declared that the Puerto Rican peso was no longer valid at all, and they all had to be exchanged for the U.S. dollar, but at an exchange rate that was 40% less of what the actual value was of the Puerto Rican peso. And if you think of the effect of the Twin Towers, tremendous tragedy of 9/11, the United the way that it, if the repercussions that went through economically, politically, socially. We even set up a new Homeland Administration. We created a new law called the Patriot Act, and the economy was thrown into a tailspin. And that was from two large buildings going down. Imagine the repercussions in this country of a 40% devaluation of everybody's wealth, every piece of savings, real estate, everything that you own, and then concomitantly all your debts going up by 40%. Well, that's what it would be, a complete social shutdown, and that's what happened in Puerto Rico in 1900. And the following year, in 1901, the United States enunciated the Hollander Act, which was a steeply graduated set of property taxes that no farmer had ever faced before in their history. So you have a real economic trifecta. You have a hurricane, a currency devaluation, and a property tax. It was an early application of Naomi Klein's shock doctrine. They swept through Puerto Rico, and the net result quickly was that farmers started losing their farms. They needed cash. Their 40% of their wealth had been taken away. They needed to take loans, but there was no usury law restriction. So they went to the appropriately titled American Colonial Bank. It was the bank of record at the time. Without usury law restrictions, the interest rates were so preposterous that farmers defaulted. And within 25, 30 years, North American banking syndicates owned 80% the most arable land in Puerto Rico. And they turned Puerto Rico into a previously diversified harvest and and economy that was turned into a one-crop cash cow economy, that of sugar. And the four largest centrales were the units of organization. Centrales was like a large hacienda. The four largest centrales by themselves represented over half of that land. That shows you an idea of the enormous concentration of capital and power in Puerto Rico very quickly. So that's how that was the stress that was applied to the Puerto Rican economy at the outset, and the net result was foreign ownership of Puerto Rican land. Well, when you pitch forward here to the 21st century, you have the Wall Street rating services telling two successive administrations in Puerto Rico that if they don't get their fiscal house in order, meaning inflict a series of very real fiscal austerities on the island of Puerto Rico, that their debt would be downgraded to junk bond status. Puerto Rico did exactly as they were asked, in a somewhat servile manner. They raised property taxes. Gasoline taxes went up twice in 1 year. Water rates rose by 67%. Electricity rose to 29 cents per kilowatt hour, which is more than twice what it costs in the most expensive any jurisdiction in the United States. They fired 33,000 government workers, eliminated pensions, rolled back pensions where they didn't eliminate them, eliminated health care benefits for teachers, closed schools. 120 public schools have closed in the last 5 years. And just 2 weeks ago, they instituted an 11.5% sales tax. So that was a highly regressive set of taxes here that are affecting disproportionately the poor and the working person in Puerto Rico. The result of that was that over the last 10 years, 400,000 Puerto Ricans have voted with their feet by moving off the island. In such large numbers, 400,000, that in Florida alone, there is now in the area of 1 million Puerto Ricans, 700 of them concentrated in the Orlando area. That then creates yet another problem in Puerto Rico, because now you have a shrinking tax base. If 10% of your people have vacated the island within the last 5 to 10 years, so now you have 90% of the previous population shouldering 100% of the tax burden, which is going up because of all these increasing taxes. Well, what did the Wall Street rating services do after all these things were done that were asked? They went and downgraded the debt to junk bond status anyway. In other words, the rating services lied. They said do this and to avoid this. Well, they that what they asked done. And yet, over the last year, all three rating services, Fitch, Moody's, Dun & Bradstreet, they downgraded Puerto Rico's debt. That then set off a new wave of fiscal austerities, because now that's why we have the 11.5% sales tax and more people leaving the island. And then just a week and a half ago, the governor of Puerto Rico declared this debt is unsustainable and we're in a downward spiral. So that's a short, actually, I know that felt somewhat long, but actually that was the thumbnail sketch of how we got there. The larger question, which we can just touch on very quickly, is how the economy got to this point. And that includes the fact that there is a Jones Act, which was instituted in 1920. Section 27 of the Merchant Marine Act of 1920 is known as the Jones Act, and that specifically prohibits Puerto Rico from having its own shipping industry. Puerto Rico being an island, that's a foundational industry. But no, the way it works is foreign registry vessels are highly taxed, and fees are added. And if they don't, if those foreign registry vessels don't come into Puerto Rico, then they are obligated to go to Jacksonville, Florida, where they are offloaded, all the merchandise, and then reloaded onto an American boat, and then they're permitted to come into Puerto Rico. What was originally a law in 1920, this Merchant Marine Act, was for physical protection of boats, especially from German U-2 boats that were patrolling the international waters at the time. That is no longer necessary, but the law has stated, it's an archaic, useless law that, however, does provide the function of providing price support to any foreign goods that come into Puerto Rico. Because of this mechanism, all the goods that come in from foreign, other than the United States, have enormous costs added on that are then passed on to Puerto Rican consumer. And that what that does to the United States is it enables the U.S. to compete unfairly with its products. 85% of the products consumed in Puerto Rico come from the United States. The island is the fourth largest market. That island of only 3.6 million people is the fourth largest market for goods, U.S. goods. There are more Walgreens and Walmarts per square mile in Puerto Rico than anywhere else in the world. And all of that is done under the auspices of highly inflated consumer prices. And in many cases, those prices are 200%. They're double what they are in the United States. So you have an island now that is being subject to this inflated price structure. Every day, every Puerto Rican is paying that. That doesn't get factored into the $73 billion public debt. What the Jones Act doesn't get, the net revenue losses to the government also aren't passed in. The calculation was done. There was a report submitted to the General Accounting Office in the year 2012. It was a Jones Act study, which showed that roughly $80 billion have been the net revenue losses to the Puerto Rican government since the inception of that Jones Act in 1920. So that, to restate that differently, if the government has lost $80 billion in revenue, but the public debt is only $73 billion, then it's obvious that if the Jones Act did not exist, then neither would the public debt of Puerto Rico. And that's through the operations of just this one law. Puerto Rico, in addition to this law, which does not enable Puerto Rico to develop its own shipping, Puerto Rico has no control over international trade relations. It's forbidden to do so under the Foraker Act and the Puerto Rico Federal Relations Act. Puerto Rico doesn't have control over its currency, borders, coastal operations, maritime and admiralty law, its judicial code, its defense, its postal system, its FCC licensing. The entire Puerto Rican economy is completely controlled rigidly by the United States. And politically, any law that's passed in the Puerto Rican legislature is subject to complete congressional veto. The United States Congress has plenary jurisdiction over any bill that's passed by the Puerto Rican legislature. And it's been exercised. At one point when the Puerto Rican legislature passed a minimum wage law in the 1920s, the Congress, vetoed it. And when the people of Puerto Rico tried to take it to the United States Supreme Court in Balzac v. Puerto Rico, the Supreme Court declared that even though Puerto Ricans had been declared citizens in 1917 so they could fight in World War I, Balzac v. Puerto Rico held that the U.S. Constitution did not apply to Puerto Rico because Puerto Rico was a territory and not a state. So you can't put it much more nakedly than that. Puerto Rico has been stripped of it, of its political and economic instrumentalities that are absolutely necessary with any self-sustaining economy and with any type of vibrant ability to meet these kind of these economic burdens and these public debts. Puerto Rico is paying these public debts precisely because it does not have an economy and has been prohibited from having one. This has to change, and that's why the more fundamental question is, what is the relationship, the political relationship of Puerto Rico that needs to, and how does that have to be recalibrated, because it is now so dysfunctional that it's not working for anybody.
Nelson Dennis, I wonder if you can also add another component to this. And, you know, there's the John Paulson predatory aspect, and I also, because I want to get as much in as we can, because this has been an entire history lesson that contextualizes and gives historic depth to the particular crisis now, the debt crisis that is unfolding for the people of Puerto Rico, what some are calling the Freddy Krueger nightmare, or what is also known as the Ann Krueger report. Talk about that also to fill out further our understanding of how the island got to be in the economic debt crisis that it is currently living through.
Well, that's the part of the historical context again. John Paulson is a very successful hedge fund billionaire. His hedge fund made not revenue, profited. The profits in 2007 from John Paulson's hedge fund were $15 billion. And those were made stateside in 2007 by betting against the American economy during the mortgage crisis. If you remember the credit default swaps and the real estate, the asset-based lending and the whole mess that was basically engineered by half of Wall Street, including the rating services, which were found guilty of not having properly analyzed some of these debt instruments. And they were actually very heavily fined for doing that by the SEC, but the horses were out of the barn. So John Paulson makes $15 billion basically buying up these computer rolls that have many thousands of homes in varying stages of foreclosure, and then working the protocols on those loans, basically buying up distressed assets for pennies on the dollars. It's predatory capitalism in its most distilled version. Well, John Paulson right now is the lead investor in Puerto Rico. There's a law called Act 22, which provides high net worth individuals from the United States, billionaires, people like John Paulson, gives them a complete 20-year tax abatement on all interest, dividend, and capital gains income from any investments that they make in Puerto Rico. And so John Paulson, very visibly, he's the best known, he's the one that's been using this law most widely throughout Puerto Rico. He's building a $500 million resort and hotel condominium complex in the Dorado Beach area in Puerto Rico. In addition to other things, they're basically concentrating, since this is a lot of tourist investments that they're making, in the Puerto Rican coastline. And behind this, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, New Yorker Magazine, Bloomberg News, all of them have been running articles. This was before the declaration by Garcia Padilla that the debt was unsustainable. Right up until that point, all these financial publications were operating as carnival barkers for this freak show that is becoming the Puerto Rican economy. They've all been recommending openly, in their pages, running columns, big articles about the preferable, the highly preferred and highly leveraged tax situation in Puerto Rico due to this Act 22, and how the time was perfect to invest in and scoop up properties in Puerto Rico. Basically, welcoming all the hedge funds and all the predatory capitalists to come on down to Puerto Rico. The water is fine. You can scoop up all these distressed assets. and they're not making, they're not hiding it, they're not, you know, it's really ironic that they're just willing to say this and write this in their columns and, you know, for anyone to see. At the same time that they have this two-sided, this hypocritical tax structure where they're squeezing Puerto Ricans off the island and Wall Street is making the, inflicting these fiscal austerities on the rank and file average Puerto Ricans who has to leave. 400,000 of them are left at the same time that billionaires are being welcomed in with a completely, with a different taxing structure. So it's, pretty hypocritical and to do it so nakedly that you treat people this way and call that a sort of a fair and just way of dealing with an entire island with 3.5 million people on it. And it makes it very clear that what we're in a situation is it's a battle between concentrated capital and investors in Wall Street who are, there's nothing wrong with, I'm not criticizing the American people in this, but it's the well-placed people in the American economy and the American government. And very often in Puerto Rico, it doesn't feel like you're dealing with the United States of America. You're dealing with the United Sociopaths of America, because you're dealing with this the people that are driven by quarterly profits and their these hedge funders. That it's just a simple economic calculus, and it cares nothing for people. It'll mow people down, and it doesn't even matter if it's completely hypocritical and unjust and makes no sense. So right now, the way that Puerto Rico is trying to resolve this is meeting with Citigroup, meeting with the Oppenheimer funds, trying to renegotiate this debt. But since Puerto Rico is a territory, doesn't even have the bankruptcy protections of the United of the states in the United States, and it doesn't have bankruptcy Chapter 9 protection. So these credit sources, the Oppenheimer funds, and the ones that own the $73 billion public debt of Puerto Rico, really have the upper hand. And one of the parameters that exists is something called the Krueger Report. It's called that because it was written by a woman named Ann Krueger and two co-authors, all three of whom collectively have worked for 63 years for the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. This Krueger report suggests some highly draconian solutions, which are essentially along the order of what's been done for the last 10 years, more fiscal austerities. So it is, this United Sociopaths of America style. These austerities include eliminating the minimum wage in Puerto Rico or reducing it to one-third of $7.25, which is about $2.41, which is basically not having a minimum wage at all, because you have to pay people something, or else they won't show up to work at all. $2.41 on an island that has a higher cost of living than any jurisdiction in the United States.
And Nelson, we have about 30 seconds left before, unfortunately, we
have that's okay. All right. Well, the Krueger Report is, we call it the Freddy Krueger Report, because it'll basically gentrify Puerto Rico as we know it within the next 20 years. The more powerful solution has to be to reconsider the political relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States. That has to be changed, and Puerto Rico has to be allowed to develop its own economy, or it's never going to be able to pay this public debt.
Well, you have outraged me. The book, War Against All Puerto Ricans, Revolution and Terror in America's Colony, outraged me more.
Equals death. I'ma cry freedom to my very last breath. Pull up the shades and let the sun shine. Brother, we ain't free while we forced to die. We set the early grace for a lie, but I spit back out that American pie. Me Morinque, still ain't free to this day. You bought your Trojan gifts and walked away. La Isla de Vieques is still in pain. Boricuas waving the U.S. flag are insane. Yeah, I said it, go ahead and discredit my words with your Fox News media edits. I'm a stay spitting poetic justice. Uncle Sam got his hand out to shake.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.